Welcome to Physicians Beyond the Bedside. I am Norm Chapin, your host. Today, I'm reviewing the process and tools that you can use to make effective decisions. We each make hundreds of decisions daily, some trivial and some momentous. Making effective decisions is an important attribute for physicians. You're listening to a podcast on making an important transition from clinical medicine at the bedside to a non-clinical role. I will provide examples of using a decision-making process when considering this specific transition. The process is useful for any type of decision, but is probably best reserved for major or complex decisions. I will be including many resources in the show notes for today's show that you will find helpful as you refine your optimal decision-making process. Hello and welcome to another episode of Beyond the Bedside. I am your host, Dr. Norm Chapin. Beyond the Bedside is a podcast that will help you find a non-clinical role and take your career in new, rewarding, and sometimes unanticipated directions. I'm very happy that you are here to learn about opportunities beyond the bedside. How you make decisions impacts the quality of your decisions. Experience can teach us how to make better decisions, but this knowledge can take years to accumulate and result in frustration and significant costs. When I teach physicians and other healthcare workers about safety design and transforming into a highly reliable organization, I like to emphasize the value of learning from the experience of others and harm events that have occurred to others. This is equally true regarding effective decision making. Learning how others have made good decisions or bad decisions and applying those lessons to our own decision-making process can save us from many poor decisions. There are many excellent sources that discuss the steps in a decision-making process. In 1967, Peter Drucker published The Effective Decision. He detailed 6 sequential steps necessary to make great decisions. His article was specifically focused on executives making business decisions, but there are elements of his process that can be relevant to you as you are making career decisions, and I feel may be very helpful to you. So Peter Drucker included 6 steps in his decision-making process. Number 1, classify the problem. Number 2, define the problem. The 3rd was specify the answer to the problem and set what he referred to as boundary conditions. 4th step, deciding what is right versus what is acceptable. And we'll talk a little bit more about this later on. The 5th step was building in the actions to carry it out and actually execute on the decision. And finally, the 6th step was testing the validity and effectiveness against the course of events. So let's take these one by one and talk a little bit about what Peter Drucker meant by each of these 6 steps. The first was classify the problem. By this, Drucker means whether the problem is a generic problem or an exceptional or unique one. He gives an example in the article of 4 classifications. One of his examples, which is, I think, very germane to our discussion today, is an organization who is facing an acquisition or merger. For that particular organization, you would classify that type of decision or problem as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. But for organizations in general, mergers and acquisitions are not unique. They are generic, and they face each and every organization throughout the lifetime of the organization itself. This is true for physicians. For an individual physician, you may be facing what you consider to be a unique choice, a unique problem, and trying to make a decision about what the best solution is. But for physicians in general, the unique problem of deciding whether you should stop practicing clinical medicine, begin a non-clinical role, or retire early, any situation, while you would think of it as a unique situation, these are decisions that are made in the physician community many, many times a year. And because of that, just like an executive who's facing a merger or acquisition, you should also learn from others who have faced similar situations. And I think this is where coaching or mentoring can become such a valuable asset for those of us who are making these quote-unquote unique decisions. The 2nd step that Peter Drucker talked about was defining the problem. And by defining the problem, he wants us to answer the question of what is really pertinent about this problem. What is this decision all about? What's the real issue? For physicians considering a career change, defining the problem may include answering for yourself the why of the reason behind why you are contemplating this career transition. You need to understand and define the problem in your current role. Drucker cautions against becoming the prisoner of an incomplete definition of the problem. This can sometimes lead to bad decisions because we didn't take the time to fully define exactly what the problem was, and therefore we embrace the wrong solutions. The third step that Drucker talked about was specifying the answer to the problem. By that, he means what he refers to in the article as boundary conditions. And I think these boundary conditions are something that physicians deal with all the time. Drucker defines the boundary conditions as the outcomes the decision must achieve or the conditions that it must satisfy. Identifying these boundary conditions helps you avoid the problem of throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Developing a solution that doesn't really solve the problem. It gets rid of one problem, but it creates another for us. So you want your role or the solution that you're seeking to include those elements that are important to you, that define you as a person, as a husband, a spouse, a father, or mother. And you want to exclude those elements that really bring little or no meaning to your professional or personal existence. So these are what we're talking about and what Drucker was referring to when he talked about the boundary conditions. We'll talk more about these a little bit later when we talk about some specific tools that you can use to help you make effective decisions. The next point that Drucker made was deciding what is right versus acceptable. And he emphasized that this step will prevent you from compromising or settling for what is just okay, rather than what is best for you in both your personal and professional lives. You can't exclude your spouse, significant other, children, or significant other family members in your extended family when you're choosing what is right. You can't choose this from a single limited perspective. However, you don't want to exclude the best option for all concerned out of a fear or a sense that it will be inconvenient for you to do what you would really prefer or what would really be best for you and your family, both personally and professionally. The next step that Drucker emphasized was building in the action to carry it out, to execute on it. Drucker stresses that a decision without an action plan really isn't a decision at all. You need to build the plan to execute into the decision matrix itself. You need to include the steps that you will take to execute on the decision. And the final step in his six steps was testing the validity and effectiveness really against the course of events. I don't want you to think of this as second-guessing the decision, but it is important that you're continually mindful of any changes in the condition or any changes in the assumptions that you made by installing this feedback loop into your decision-making process. Are your assumptions remaining valid? Are the goals of you, your family, your children, and your professional career the same as they were when you went through this decision? We should not just blindly follow a decision when we see that it is not taking us where we really want to go. And it may be that the goal has changed because of changes in our circumstance. Another decision-making model that is somewhat similar to Drucker's, but has a few more steps, is what we call the rational decision-making model. The rational decision-making model starts out again, identifying the problem or the opportunity. You establish and weigh decision criteria. And again, we'll talk a little bit more about how we can use decision criteria in a tool, which I'm going to share with you later on. The third step is to collect and organize all the related information about the problem or the opportunity that you're facing, and then analyzing the situation, looking at that data and analyzing it carefully. From that, you develop a variety of options and assess all these options. And importantly, you assign a value or a priority to each one of the options that is a potential solution to solve this problem or for you to respond to the opportunity. At that point, you make the decision. You decide which of the options are best and implement the decision, getting back to what Drucker would have referred to as the action plan around the decision. You implement the decision. And then, again, it's very important, and it's stressed in this model as well, that you evaluate and reevaluate the decision to make sure that you have reached the correct decision. Another model that I think can be sometimes very helpful for certain types of decisions is what we call the intuitive model. And this decision-making model focuses on the fact that in some decisions, there isn't any real logical method or reasoning method or rational method to the decision-making process. It's really a process that is dictated by some inner knowledge or intuition that you have about what the right option is for you. But the intuitive model is not solely based on gut feelings. You look at previous decisions you've made in your life. You look at the pattern recognition, and you learn from patterns that colleagues have gone through, other family members have gone through, and you recognize a pattern and recognize which option is the prominent option or the best option for you. Another model that is sometimes used in certain decision-making is what we call a recognition-primed model. And this model is a combination of both the rational and the intuitive decision-making processes or decision-making models. The first step, again, you identify the problem. In most cases, then, you will think about the problem. You do sort of a mental simulation and think the problem through. And then, oftentimes, the decision presents itself to you and you make the decision. Again, it's important to create the action plan. It's important to evaluate that decision. But this is another model that we use that we have learned sort of the rules around how we make certain decisions, and we apply those rules in this recognition primed model without having to go through all of the elaborate steps. But some would argue that those steps are occurring in our unconscious brain rather than our conscious brain. And probably most useful when we have made decisions of that same type over and over again, and that has kind of become embedded in our unconscious mind as how we approach decisions of this type. The last type I want to talk about is the creative model. And a creative model is slightly different than the rational or the intuitive or the recognition primed model. A creative model, again, step number one, problem identification. You gather information and insights and initial ideas for solutions in this model. Then your mind goes through what they call an incubation period. And this is where your unconscious mind, again, takes over the process. You are not really conscious of even attacking the problem or the opportunity, but you achieve a realization and the development of an awareness of a solution that will work for this problem. Sometimes these situations occur with me at approximately 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning where I have spent the day becoming aware of a problem. I sidelined it because of other issues that I was dealing with that day. And then in the middle of the night or in the evening when I'm relaxed and not really even focusing on the problem, a solution will present itself. You still have to test and finalize the solution. You still have to make an active decision once that solution has presented itself to your conscious mind. But it's amazing, as I thought back on this, how many times those decisions and this decision process has actually been utilized by me, and I had not really even been aware of it. I have a special offer for you today. I have created a list of the top 10 leadership skills physicians need to develop to be maximally effective in leadership roles. The skills I included on the list have been studied and have been found to increase the effectiveness of leaders in any organization. You definitely need to cultivate and develop these skills to increase your effectiveness when assuming a leadership role. Physicians, of course, are leaders at the bedside in clinical or in non-clinical settings. These skills will benefit you whether you are at the bedside or beyond. Please visit my website, physiciansbeyondthebedside.com/top10leadership skills, for your copy of this resource today. I will also include a link to this resource in my show notes. You can simply click on that to receive your free copy. So the next thing that I would like to talk to you about is a tool that you can use when you are reaching a complex or a difficult decision or addressing an opportunity for you that is a more complex opportunity, maybe not quite as binary as some of the other decisions that we face. The tool is the decision matrix tool, and this tool can do a great job of identifying options and helping you to develop criteria upon which you're going to base your decision. You can think of the options as the solutions you feel are viable to solve the problem and that has been identified. And the criteria can be thought of as the boundary conditions from the Drucker paradigm or from the rational decision-making process. This method is a tool that is very useful in the rational decision-making model. It assists in identifying different solutions, potentially all of the solutions, and assigning a numerical value to each option. This tool is known by many different names. Some of the more common are Pew matrix, selection matrix, or criteria-based matrix. It may be easier to visualize what I'm about to describe to you, so I will include several examples of a decision matrix in the show notes. A decision matrix is basically formatted as a table with rows and columns. In the rows, you write the options that you are considering or the potential solutions for your problem. If you are making a decision regarding specific opportunities you are considering, each of those options would be in a single row. When considering whether to change your career, each row would be a separate option. Row 1 might be remain in full-time clinical practice. Row 2, full-time clinical practice, but to begin preparing for a non-clinical role by getting some education, either a degree or a non-degree curriculum. Row 3 could be a part-time clinical practice option and a paid part-time non-clinical role. And row 4 could be a full-time non-clinical role. These are just examples of some options you might put in the various rows of a selection matrix or a decision-making matrix. Other examples could be the types of non-clinical roles you would consider. Maybe you've already decided, I'm going to leave full-time clinical practice and I want to go into a non-clinical role. So then you could list non-clinical roles. You could list roles in a healthcare organization, payer organization, pharmaceutical company, a graduate medical education role, or roles in the non-healthcare sector. You really can choose exactly which options you want to consider based on a variety of factors. And a decision-making algorithm or matrix can help you arrive at a decision about which type of non-clinical role meets your needs best. It then can also be used to decide on which specific opportunity would be best for you. Now, the columns in the table are for the criteria you determine will factor into the decision. As I mentioned earlier, these are the boundary conditions of what a successful outcome of your decision is. Examples of criteria depending on the decision, a relocation to a new clinical role, for example, might include climate, compensation, scope of your practice, the amount of call you would have to take, the volume of call when you are on call, quality of schools, cost of living in the community, availability of housing for you and your family, etc. These are all criteria that you may choose to help you analyze the decision. Once you've decided on the appropriate criteria, including lessons learned from colleagues, coaches, mentors, and conversations with your spouse or significant other and family members, you then rate those criteria for each option you are considering. You can use many different scales for this. Common scales are either 3-point scales, 5-point scales, or even 10-point scales. Once you have assigned a value to each box in the table, the next step is to weight the importance of each of those criteria. Again, you can use any scale as long as it provides the ability to differentiate the criteria and you use it consistently. You and your family may, for example, rate the call schedule as a 5, highest priority, and climate as a 1, lowest priority. Each of us will have different weighting scales that we use to the individual criteria. The weighting of the column is then multiplied by the rating that you gave to the criteria. So, for example, if the call schedule for option number 1 was a 10 on a scale of 1 to 10, and for option number 2 was a 2 on a scale of 1 to 10, meaning much more call, then you would multiply the weighting of that column by the rating you gave to it and come up with a final score. Once you have a final score in each cell, you then add them together to provide you with a total for each option. And the option with the highest score wins. It sounds simple, but although this method is a rational method, an element of subjectivity or intuition can be included when you're weighting the criteria. I would recommend developing the criteria and the weighting on which you base your decision before you are considering specific opportunities. This may prevent you from adjusting the weighting in order to have an option that is attractive from one limited perspective appear to be the best option. The system is only as reliable as you make it. You and your family must be honest about your priorities when developing the matrix. Please see the examples that I have included in the show notes for you. I have also included some links in the show notes to internet resources that you can use to learn more about the decision-making matrix. Well, that wraps up our show for today. Thank you for joining and listening to the podcast. There are many additional decision-making resources available, books, courses, and podcasts. I will add some of the best in my show notes. If you have any comments or questions, please feel free to add them in the comment section on the website, www.physiciansbeyondthebedside.com.